Hey, y'all. It's me, Jess Bubico, and I am excited to be here with you on the Waking Up with Jess podcast. Each week, I'll invite you to wake up to your inner knowingness, get creative, and march to the beat of your own drum in your business and life. We'll dive into different subject areas from business to health to work, relationships, and beyond. On the podcast, we'll get raw, honest, and real, keeping it a little bit personal, a little bit educational, and most importantly, we're going to have a lot of fun. Each episode, you'll feel like you're sitting down at a coffee shop having an intimate conversation with a few of your best friends. Join me each week as I act as your confidant and friend who loves the heck out of you and wants to see you shine. Come along and wake up with a cup of Jess. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. I am excited. I have with me Erin Claire Jones today. We're going to be diving into all things human design. Erin, thanks for being here today.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Erin was actually like my first segue. You were my first segue into human design because I had a friend. It was like back in the day and I was trying to figure out my life and why I kept saying yes to everything and then like regretting it. And she was like, oh, like there's this thing called human design. You should know about it. You have emotional authority. And then I think you were the first person that I afterwards started like learning about human design from. I feel like you're one of the, I don't want to say OGs because I know it's like, not like you know, you're that old, you're pretty young, but you're one of the people who's been talking about it. I feel like before it got trendy and cool in 2020. So I know you bring a breath of and depth of knowledge to the subject. So do you want to tell everybody a little bit about how you got into human design, how it came into your world?
Of course. So, you know, human design is relatively new. It has been around since 1987. And I discovered it in 2015. And in a very serendipitous way, I was living in New York City and sat next to a stranger who asked to read my human design chart. And like you just kind of, you know, reference, human design was pretty fringe then. Nobody really knew what it was. I didn't know what it was, nor did anyone I knew. But I was like, okay, tell me everything. Like, what do you see in this chart, this weird looking chart? And he gave me the most accurate, insightful, and confronting reading I'd ever received. And he really called me out, but also, you know, made me feel like so liberated to be me in such a beautiful way. And he ended that conversation by saying, Erin, I think you're meant to do this. And he invited me in to study with him. And so in 2015, I began studying human design with him and we started building a business together around how to bring human design to business because that was really where my focus was at the time. So that's how it all began. You know, it's been amazing to watch human design grow in popularity and awareness and impact in the past. I would say 2018, it started. And then you're right, 2020, it kind of was like, okay, I'm here in a bigger way. But it wasn't so cool back in 2015, but we really tried.
Yeah, I love that. Sometimes I feel like to be a trendsetter, you have to start with something before it's cool. And don't you have the freak to genius? You've got the 43-23 in your... Okay. So just so people kind of know who are our human design people here, you're a 6-2 emotional projector. Correct. And you're very defined, I think, in your chart.
7 centers defined.
Okay, amazing. So what are the two that are not defined?
Ego and sacral.
Okay. I would actually love to talk about one of the things I see oftentimes with projectors is this idea of like receiving an invitation and what do invitations look like? And I feel like a lot of projectors who, from like the people that I know in my life, it's like what I find when projectors are really like honoring themselves and their energies, they tend to get invitations, like invitations that are compelling. And I have a projector in one of my classes right now. And she, whenever she speaks, everyone's like, tell us more about that. Like, and it's just her sharing herself and being seen. So I'd love to hear from your perspective a little bit about like projectors, invitations, and what that means through your lens.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I first discovered that I was meant to wait for an invitation as a projector, I didn't really know what to make of it. You know, I was kind of deep in the like entrepreneurial scene in New York City at the time. And I was like, I think I'm supposed to hustle and chase. So like, I don't quite know what invitation means in this context. And I think it's been so wonderful to experiment with it over the years and really discover what it means for me. So I think the way that I understand the invitation as a projector is that as projectors, it is so natural for us to see things and want to share them because we can just see how things can be improved, how people can do things better, like when people should quit and leave. Like we just see it. And I think we can't help it in some ways. But if we share all those insights with people that are not asking or in spaces where it's not really invited in, it will often just go over somebody's head and it can feel really exhausting and inspire bitterness within us. And so I think I see the invitation as a tool to just protect my energy and let me know where to put it and when, you know? Mm-hmm. So for me, it's like, if I'm not invited in, not a problem. It's just like not the space for me to share my guidance. And that can show up in so many different ways. Like, it's like, oh, I really want to be on this podcast, but like, they don't see me, you know, or like, oh, I really want to be friends with this person, but like, it doesn't actually feel very reciprocal. So I think another lesson for me has been, I am not always seen by the people who I want to see me. So it's more just paying attention to like, who is actually seeing me? Because the example, like you're sharing with a projector in one of your classes, like when they feel seen, like it probably feels amazing for her. Actually, it's probably so energizing and exciting and inspires her to want to share more. And I think for me, I have enough experience of what those invitations feel like that it's worth waiting for them, you know, yeah. But I do think it can feel like a little bit of a disempowering concept initially. And I just want the projectors to know that like, it is simply a tool to protect your energy and make sure you're putting it in the right places because you have so much to give and it's worth waiting to have the right people to share that with.
I love that. I love the idea that strategy and authority is something that's here to protect our energy from using it in places where maybe we're not going to get like the most energetic bang for our buck.
Totally. And it's true for every type.
Yeah. Do you want to go a little bit into, I love hearing from different people's perspectives because it's like, sometimes you hear about strategy and authority from one person and it's like, that doesn't resonate or I don't fully get it, but I find everyone has their unique way of explaining it. So I would love to hear your thoughts on all of them.
Yeah, of course. So let us start with generators and manifesting generators. So their strategy is to respond, you know, as you probably observe, there's a lot of misunderstanding around this one. Because I think what often people think is like, if I'm here to respond, then I'm here to wait, then I'm here to be passive, then I'm here to just like sit on the couch and I don't get it because I'm here to be a doer. And it just like doesn't add up. And I think what I would say for generators and manifesting generators is that you are always responding. And the key for you is to just keep your awareness open and see what is showing up in your world that actually sparks some kind of gut response and expands the feeling internally. When you feel pulled towards something, it's probably not going to be what you expected, but it's where you're meant to go. You know, whereas if you're like, I think that I should do this, or maybe I should like take this job because the commute's shorter, that's not a response, that's your mind. And so I would say what's most important for both these types is that what you are moving towards is led by your gut and not by your mind. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the biggest thing is people are like, am I responding? I'm like, is it driven by your gut? And they're like, yes. I'm like, then absolutely. You know, so I wouldn't get too in your head about it. It's just like, is it driven by my gut and what feels right over what I think should be right? And also
I'm curious because something that I've heard people say before is if I'm hearing someone speak, so like a girlfriend of mine is a generator, and she was listening to someone talk on YouTube and she does PR and she was like, oh my God, I feel like I need to reach out to this guy and see, but it wasn't something that came into her world to respond to, but she was responding to something that really resonated and lit her up. Do you see that as responding as well?
100%.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be directed to you. Towards you. That's the difference between the projector invitation and the generator and manifesting generator response. A projector invitation is directed at you. It's like, Aaron, I want you to do this. Like, you are the only one that can fill this role. I want your insight here. Response is anything in your world, whether or not it's pointed at you. And it's funny you share that example because I had a client a few years ago who I remember she like read a Wall Street Journal article and she was just like, oh, there's so many things they missed. And there's like, she was just like so on fire about it. And so she reached out to the writer and they ended up collaborating on their next article because like she had so much to share and she was just responding, you know, it was like not a thing that was at all directed at her. So I think that's absolutely a response.
Yeah.
And it's that excitement. Go ahead.
Yeah. And one of the, I feel like, you know, it's like, I want to recognize you in this moment. Cause I'm like, one of the things that's beautiful is you've worked with so many people and you have so much experience that it's like, I hear you pulling from this sort of like log of information of like, I talked to this person and this, it's like, that essence, I feel like, two of the three, the experimenter in your chart, like you've gotten to experiment with so many people. Obviously, you're now like up on the roof in that sixth line phase, but you have so much wisdom, which is also very sixth line.
Thanks for saying that,
And so, one of the questions that I hear people ask a lot that are generators is, how do I know the difference between a sacral response versus something that gets me excited? And like maybe like excitement from the mind versus that sustainable excitement that sort of like juices them up and fills them with fuel.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I guess a few ways that I would help people distinguish what's what there is, one, your gut feeling and excitement will stay with you. Like if it's not your excitement, you might be around somebody like you who's really excited about a thing and they might be like, oh my God, I'm so excited. And then they might walk away from your energy and the excitement dissipates. You know, because they're taking in your excitement and it's not actually rooted in their gut. So that's a big piece. And as you know well, you know, our undefined and open centers in our design can speak to where we are most sensitive to others. And so you might be somebody that's really excited about, like really easily excitable, which is obviously an amazing gift like you are, but it also can be really confusing at times because you might be around somebody who's really excited. You can take on their excitement, be like, let's do it. And then you might walk away and be like, I don't want to do it. So I would say, you know, another way to distinguish it is, what's for you will not feel like there's pressure around it. Whereas if you feel like a lot of pressure, like I must make this happen right now, or like I have to go do this thing, like that's not coming from your gut. Your gut is more like my body is moving towards this and I must do it, but I don't feel pressure around it. And then I would say like a really easy way to just like double check is to have somebody ask you like, do you really want to do this? And do you want to do it right now? And just see, is there a visceral physical response you have to that question? But I do think it's important for us, whatever our design, to realize how sensitive we are to other people's energy, because I've talked to a lot of people that have a sacral or trust your gut authority, which is all about trusting your gut feeling in the moment. But then they also have an undefined emotional center, which means they're really sensitive to other people's feelings about something. So it actually can be healthy for them in many cases to actually take a beat just to make sure that their gut feeling is the thing that's speaking and it's not somebody else's emotions. Does that make sense?
Totally. I think one of the things that I used to get frustrated about in my business, like back in the day, and that I've had to be, because I also think there's almost like an energetic responsibility within myself when I have this knowledge, is like, I have a defined will center. And so I'm like, let's do this, you know, and people are like, I'm not ready yet, but then they're in my energy and I'm like, but you can do it, you know? And then it's like, they have to step back. Like I have to be careful with like initiating, I should say like intentional and mindful, because if it's not something that someone feels ready to do, and then they get in my energy and I'm like, but you can do anything, you know, then they're like, but yeah, this is not sustainable unless I'm like literally like sleeping on top of you at night. You know what I mean? And then once they're done with working with me, they might not even want to continue it. So I've had to be very mindful with my own energy of like, you come to me. If you're feeling like this is lighting you up and you're ready, I'm here to help you move forward, but I can't, you won't have this success, satisfaction, peace, whatever it is that you want from this experience, unless it's originating from within you.
Yeah. And I just think that's all such a good reminder of the importance of knowing our design. So we just could really know like how to work with others in really responsible and conscious ways, because, you know, you are a manifestor, you are here to initiate, but one of your gifts is like transforming people who are asking to be transformed by you, who are inviting you in to be transformed. And so like there is a projector vibe there where you've got to make sure like, are they really ready? Are they asking me? And like you said, this is so important for anyone with a defined will or ego. I see so many coaches have this, that like when people are in your energy, they believe they can do anything. It's like one of your greatest gifts. Like you can empower them to be like, anything's possible. But when they leave your energy, that willfulness can also dissipate. And so, you know, Tony Robbins is the perfect example of this. Somebody who has a really strong defined ego. So it's just important for you as a coach to be, or just as a teacher in person, to be like, I give people all this self-belief, and also like, I need to work with them when they're outside of my energy and realize that it isn't always sustainable.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I think, I mean, Tony Robbins gets people to walk across fire, which is amazing. Totally. But I do think that this is the importance of understanding our design. And I feel like the will center is a very loaded center for people to unpack, especially if they have it defined, which I'm sure most of us speak to.
Yeah.
Right. It's a 70-30 split. Only 30% of people have it, but I find it can really create a sense of, like, I'm not enoughness for people when they get out of it. Like, well, why couldn't I do that on my own? And it's like, you said something a little bit ago with the generator. You were like, is this lighting me up? And is it time? Like, is it the right time? And I think that's really important as well.
Totally. And like, and I think that, you know, the areas that are wide and open in our design, so that's what, you know, you're referencing with the like undefined or open ego, is it doesn't mean we can't access it. It just means that it ebbs and flows. And I think we can often burn ourselves out when we're trying to consistently access it. And so I think one of my lessons for me, myself with an undefined ego, is that it's not that I'm not motivated and it's not that I'm not driven. It's like, I have a lot of drive in my design, especially with my root, but I have a lot of motivation too, but like it just ebbs and flows. And so like the more I just like use it when it's there and rest when it's not, like the more effective and productive I can be at creating things that I'm excited about. And I also think with anyone with an undefined or open ego, like you said, like this not enoughness is a really a big theme in our lives. And so we can kind of get caught in these loops of just trying to prove that we're enough to everyone and everything. And I think the minute we realize that like we've got nothing to prove, and like anything that's driven by that is not correct for us, it's like the most liberating thing ever to be like, oh, like I will have moments of low self-esteem, but I don't have to go prove myself to anyone. That's not really ever going to lead to the correct things for me.
Totally. I love that.
Amazing. Should I talk about the other strategies?
Let's go. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. I'm going to just keep going. I have so much to say about each of them, but I'm going to keep it, you know, concise. So let's talk about you as a manifester. You know, manifestors are the only type that are not designed to wait for something else to show up before they go after something. It's all internally driven. So what they're waiting for is basically some internal urge or inspiration or sense of fire to make something happen. They're all going to have different ways of accessing it. You know, it's like it is, some people can trust it in the moment. Some people need to sleep on it. So, you know, our authority plays a big role here as well. But I think what I notice for a lot of manifestors is they often just don't feel the permission to go after a thing because they haven't seen it done that way before, because they don't really know where it'll take them. So I just want the manifestors to remember that it's like what you might feel, you might not know where it's going to take you. You may never have seen anyone do it like that before, but often you're still meant to follow it. And I think a thing that maybe, you know, people have heard often, but I think is just such an important piece, is that those inspirations and urges often come in the more restful periods in manifestors' lives. So if they're in a really overzealous state, which they're really susceptible to, and trying to do without stop, in some ways they make themselves unavailable for new ideas to come. But when they give themselves that time to be alone, to rest, to just kind of be in that solitude that is so comfortable and important for manifestors, like they create space for new ideas to arise within them. And so I would not forget that.
Thank you for that reminder.
You're welcome.
Because I love to initiate new things all of the time. But it is one of the things that I've had to start to learn recently too, is like, who is this? Or like, if I'm working with a bunch of different organizations, who is this for me to initiate it with? So like, as an example, this year, I started to work with an organization and I was like, I don't want to just go back into this organization and do this role in the way that I've done it before. Yeah. Here's how I see this organization or this type of work transforming. Mm-hmm. And I kept trying to initiate it within this organization. And the woman was just like, wanted nothing to do with it. She was always too busy. She was always like, I'm like, basically no. Mm-hmm. And I was so angry. And I was like, I've never quit anything. I've quit things before, but in my mind, I've never, I'd always be like, what do I need to improve about myself? I'm frustrated with this person and angry. So what do I need to change? And then I would keep trying to change myself to stay, versus I was like, I'm just going to initiate over here. And it, as soon as I just let it go, something else immediately showed up, which was so much more aligned. So I think, as you were talking, I this next level too for me has been like, follow my urges, but also trust my authority, like trust my emotional authority with where I need to initiate this urge as well.
Correct. Totally.
And when.
I love that. And also just like, I think for so many of us, letting go, create space for new things to come in. Like if you're a generator, a manifesting generator, it's like, if you let go of the things that are, you know, consistently draining and depleting you, you create more space for aligned things to come in. You know, if you, as a projector, let go of places where you feel unrecognized, unseen, you create more space for things, you know, where you do feel seen. So just remembering that. Okay, reflectors. I have a little bit of an alternative approach to reflector strategy.
Thank you.
Yeah. Because I think that often authority and strategy are grouped together for reflectors, where it's all about them waiting a lunar cycle, which is very important because it's how they make decisions. But it also, in some ways, if that's how it's talked about, it doesn't give them any proactive way to create opportunities for themselves. And so I think for reflectors, I would say the most potent way to make yourself available for aligned opportunities is to spend time in spaces and around people that feel really good online and offline, and pay attention to who in those spaces really recognizes you, appreciates you, and cherishes you. So it's this kind of combination of planting yourself in the right spaces and kind of seeing where the recognition is in those spaces. Of course, you have to give yourself time to feel into things, but I think that no strategy is passive in human design. And so I think it's useful to kind of be given tools to actually work with it. So for reflectors, it's so much around proactively putting themselves in the right spaces and really trusting and seeing what emerges from that.
I love that. Yeah, I've had reflectors, I think when they see like none show up on their chart, they're like, what the heck does that mean? So I think that's really great.
Totally.
Yeah.
And also So anyways.
Yeah. Amazing. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about, I'd love to hear your take on profile lines and the different profile lines, and not just the different profile lines, but like, how do you see profile playing out in our lives? Like, what's the role of profile in our lives?
Yeah, it's so interesting because I feel like the way that I have always talked about profile is it basically is the piece of our design that really helps us know how to align with our purpose. It is kind of like our role in many ways, especially your own career. But I also find, and I'm sure you have as well, that like it is just applicable to so many areas. So it's actually really hard in some ways. So like tight, it's kind of hard for me to confine it to one area because I think that it does help us know how to align with our path. It also helps us know how we best learn. It also helps us know how we can best market ourselves to the world. It also lets us know needs we may have in relationships. So I'm just like, it's kind of all the things, you know? And I think it's a really actionable piece of our design in a really useful way. But I think it just helps us understand kind of our role and how to kind of share ourselves with the world.
Yeah. Amazing.
Okay.
Okay.
So you want to talk about them?
Let's do it.
Great. So if you are unfamiliar with profile, it is a fraction looking number in your design. So mine is a 6-2, you are 4-6, correct? And there are 12 combinations, but they're made up of 6 different numbers. So I'll talk about the 6 numbers, but I also want to remind people, even though we probably can't go through all 12, that we have 2 for a reason. Like so much of our journey is around finding balance between our 2 profile numbers. And I find that our profile numbers can really expose really seemingly opposite parts of ourselves that just need to come together. Like I'm going to use an example quickly. Like as a 4-6, there's a part of you that probably really wants to be in community and is really good at bringing people together. And there's like a very warm, friendly, personable nature. And then equally, there's a part of you that just wants to like sit back and watch it all go down and just observe it from a higher perspective and like actually not be in it all. And so like, you're just both, like you're in it and you're also outside of it. And like, they're both parts of you that need to be honored. And you probably might feel out of balance if you're leaning too far into one without creating space for the other two. Does that make sense to you?
Yes. And I also live on the 15th floor of my building and I love the beach, but I'd much rather observe the beach from the 15th floor than get sandy. So like, there's these things where I'm like, I love observing what's happening from up high, but I don't necessarily always want to go be a part of it, but I feel like I'm a part of it because I can observe it.
Totally. And watch
that makes
it.
Sense.
Yeah, totally. No, it does make sense because I also can imagine like, if there wasn't a thing to witness or observe, that could be really isolating, but you're like, oh, but I'm still here just on the outskirts watching it all go down. Totally. So for those that have a 1 in their profile, so that would be 1-3, 1-4, 4-1, and 5-1s, very investigative people, just here to like get into it, like understand the details. Like I think that there's such a motivation for these people to like understand how things work. And an example I often use is I once had a client who he bought a car. And his first move after buying the car was to take the car apart to understand how it worked and then put it back together. Like, that's just a desire. And like another example, I think I remember going to a magic show with my partner who has a one in his profile. And like after the magic show, I was like, that was actual magic. How amazing. We have like a wizard here. Like, I didn't care about how it worked. I was just like, it's magic. This is amazing. Like, how did we find this person? And my partner, you know, with a one, went up to the magician, was like, so how'd you learn? You know what I mean? Like, tell me about, and he just was like, YouTube, you know what I mean? They just like went down this rabbit hole, but like, there's just an impulse to understand how things work with the one. And it's important to follow that. I think if I was to give any piece of advice to the ones, I would just say, let your curiosities guide you. Like, what you feel drawn to diving deeply into is exactly where you're meant to go. If you're in a job where you no longer care about mastering it or learning the details, probably not the right place for you in the long term. Yeah. And so really kind of just being like, if you're like, I love human design, then like, learn it. You don't even know where it's going to take you, but like what you're curious about is where you're meant to go.
Yeah. Love that.
Twos, what comes easy to you is where you're meant to go. You know, the twos carry all this kind of innate talent and genius, and they're just meant to lean into the things that come very easily. And I find that as twos, we so often don't assign worth to those things. It's like, how can I build a career on that thing? Like, it just is what I've always done. And like, yeah, that's exactly what you're meant to do. I had a student last night who was saying, you know, she was making art when she was super young. It was just like, she couldn't help it. And then she like went into another career. And then her sister was like, you're an amazing artist. Like, why would you not build a career on that? She's like, I'm allowed to do that. And she's yeah. like, yeah. And then she has been a painter for the last 10 years, you know? Wow. So it's like, as twos, we often just like, don't see the thing. I even have parents, my parents reflect back things to me. And I'm like, wow, I was the same way when I was 5 years old as I am now at 33. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just like, yeah. And then the other piece I would share for the twos is that there's a very hermetic nature to us twos. And so having time and space alone to be in our own energy is so restorative and so necessary. And I would also say that two is only half of your profile. So as hermetic as you may be, you are not meant to be alone all the time. And so like mm-hmm. just making sure that that kind of like sweetness of solitude doesn't verge on like isolation. When you start to feel isolated or you're hiding your gifts from the world, oftentimes to kind of go out and find balance with your other profile line. Makes sense.
Amazing. Yeah. My dad's a two and he's always been in like systems and all that kind of stuff, but then he'll go in the basement and he'll create these creations that I'm like, how did you do that? He's like, I don't know. It was easy. I'm like, I don't think that's easy. I just think you're good at it. And people want it. They'll see his stuff. He'll like post a picture of it on Facebook and people are like, how do I order that from you? You know, he's like, I don't know. I just made a couple of them for fun. So I totally get what you're saying about people, the twos not seeing themselves and what they're good at. So
totally. Yeah. And they often like can't even explain how they do what they do. Like I had another example a few weeks ago where this woman was saying that when she was in like high school, she always like got the correct answers in geometry, but she could never show her work, you know, and the teachers would be like, how did you do it? She's like, I don't know, you know, but I just did it. And like, that's just such a two vibe where it's like, I don't know how I do what I do. I just do it. So it's like, if there are places in your life where that's just happening, I would zoom in on that area. So then we've got threes. Threes are experimenters. These are people that learn by doing. Like they need to get their hands dirty. Like you can't really tell a three how things work. They're going to be like, cool. Like, I'm actually not going to believe you until I try for myself. And so like, in some ways they're really meant to let the process be messy because they're here to like discover what does work, what doesn't, and just trust that like everything that doesn't work is bringing them closer to what does. And so I would say a big life lesson for these people is to develop a really healthy relationship with mistakes and failure and to see those as fuel for growth, not as things to make yourself wrong for. Where I see a lot of threes struggle, and I'm sure you've witnessed this, is that they kind of hold themselves back from putting a thing out into the world or launching their website because they're like, it's not perfect yet. And I'm like, it will not become better until you put it out and you bump into things and see what works and let it keep being better. So just trusting that, like, you've got to just take the first step and bump into things as you go. And I would say another final lesson for threes is that their personal journey can be so impactful for other people, you know? So sometimes they're like, oh, I got to just go educate and teach on all these things. And they remove their own story when their own story is often the most potent piece of what they have to share. So I would not forget that as a three.
Yeah.
Then we've got fours. So like you, so fours are all about community and not about huge community, but just about the right community. The idea is your opportunities are meant to come through your relationships. And so really investing in and nourishing the right relationships is the best way to create opportunity for yourself. And that could come from a former colleague, from a neighbor, from a friend. And so it's important to kind of invest in your community, but also keep them abreast of what you're up to and exploring. Where I see a lot of forced struggle is they'll like launch something new and they'll like go share it with like a ton of strangers and like forget to tell the people closest to them, you know? So I would say tell the people closest to you, let them kind of start spreading the word. And another key piece with fours is, I wonder whether you've experienced this, is that it is often healthiest to work with and date people that you either were friends with before or desire to be friends with. You know, it's not super healthy to work with strangers. Like I work with so many fours that like started a business with their partner, you know, or their college roommate or a sibling. And like, that's just a really natural thing for them to kind of work with friends.
One of the greatest joys of this year is I've been diving pretty deep into the Gene Keys. And so I started working with the Prosperity Sequence in 2021 around work and like understanding like specifically around culture, like how many people am I designed to work with? And so for me, mine's the 3 to 15, like the family unit. And this year I was like, who feels like family to me that I want to create with? And now I've entered in with three women in different, this might be a little like overzealous sacral, but it's like these three women are like my sisters and I'm like, let's create something together. And it's like, oh my God, I get to spend my week with my friends on calls, creating things. Like that is the best thing ever. And it's funny because most of my clients, like all, if I launch a new class, I'm like, I know all of these people and that feels good to me. And then there's this intimacy, like natural intimacy in the space because I know them personally, they know me personally, and then it creates a whole different experience inside of it. So 100%.
So cool. I also just like, I don't think I've heard that. I love the approach of being like, who are my favorite people? And like, I'm going to choose them first and then discover what we have to create next.
Yeah.
It's more that I want to work with you. So what can we work together around?
Yeah.
Which is such a cool thing. Yeah. So I love that example. So then we've got fives. Fives are very natural problem solvers, really good at seeing things in very innovative, heretical, different ways. I'm really good at coming in, offering a solution and walking back out. I think a big lesson for fives is that they're not meant to be kind of on call solving problems all the time. It's come and offer and leave. And so, you know, if we're to use the example of it, say you're 5-2 or 2-5, you've got a very problem solver leader part of you and also a very hermetic part of you. And so like, you're meant to like go out and solve things and then kind of retreat into your cave to kind of let your gifts build back up and then go back out and solve. I think what's so important for fives is that you've got this very mesmerizing energy that people see and they're like, oh my God, that person can help me. They can lead me. They can guide me. They can save me. Like they just see all this beautiful possibility in you. And it requires that you are so boundaried and discerning around what you say yes to, and that you're saying yes best based on what feels right to you and not based on other people's desires or expectations for you. I'm sure you've encountered many fives. I definitely have, that have built their careers based on what somebody else has wanted for them. You know, I had a client a few months ago who was a mother and her son had a five and he was like super great at football. Everyone was like super excited about his football career. And then like, she had a conversation with him and she's like, do you like football? Like, does this actually feel like the right thing for you? He's like, no, you know, but it was just so clear that it had all been built by like everyone else wanted it for him. And it was seductive because he was great at it, but it's not what felt like an authentic expression of his energy. So I would say, especially for parents of fives, give them as much space as you can to kind of become what they're meant to be. And then we've got sixes. You and I both share that in our profile. And you are in your 30s. Is that right? So sixes are meant to be these very kind of objective role models where they really inspire such authenticity in others by just being really authentic and express themselves. So the role model energy is not like, I'm the boss, listen to me. It's more like, I'm just going to like really be so embodied that it just serves as inspiration and permission for other people as well. What's really unique about the sixes is that we have this three-part life process where, and we referenced it, I think briefly before, the first 30 years of our life is meant to be trial and error galore. It's more of that three energy. It is not a time to figure anything out. It is a time to gather as much experience as you can. And then 30 to 50 is really a time to kind of like step back at it, back from it all, just observe. You might find that more and more people are coming to you for your wisdom. And there's just like a lot more clarity around where to invest your energy. And like things can just settle a little bit. They can feel like a little bit more rooted. And then as we start to edge the kind of 40s, I find, I'm curious whether you witness this in people, like I feel like people start becoming really intolerant of anything that's like not fully in alignment. So there's often a lot of transformation happening in the 40s. And then leading up to 50, 50 is where the third phase begins. And that is really the most ideal time to kind of share your wisdom with the world. It means that you, again, are such an embodied example of authenticity that your presence itself can feel like such an anchor for others and so inspiring for others. I think one thing to just remind people of is that this is not at all about waiting until you're 50. There's like such magic in every phase of the life journey. It's more about embracing the phase that you're in. I discovered human design when I was 25 and I was first upset because I was like, I would like to be a role model today. Yeah. And like one, I wasn't, but two, the role model energy is always there. You know, it's like often these people will feel like old souls at age 4, you know, but it's more that it's going to like keep getting richer and deeper and just keep kind of like growing within you. So, and I've really seen that in my own journey. You know, my 20s were radically different than my 30s. And so like, I just look back and I'm like, who was I then? And it just, I think this life process has been so helpful in understanding what was happening.
Totally. I've had to release a lot of shame too around like, who was I being in my 20s? Like, it's okay that I was in that trial and error phase and bumping into things and like not knowing what I was doing. And like, it's just okay. And I feel like a lot of people will say that exact thing that you just said, like, I want to be a role model. I'm only, and for some reason, when I first learned that, no one ever said this to me, but this is how I equated it in my mind was, I'm not going to be successful until I'm over 50. Like that was the story that I put in my brain.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I look at people like, I think you did a thing with like Gala Darling. Mm-hmm. On, and she's a 4-6 manifester, I believe. Yeah. And I look at her, I'm like, she's fucking killing it out there. And it's not that, it's about, like you said, that process to that role modelhood. And most of the women, I have like a really amazing group of women who are like 48 to like 52 who are in that role model phase. And I are coming down off the roof. And I think exactly the word you used, it's just about embodiment. And I feel like they're very relaxed into who they are. It's like they give off that sort of like Yoda, Buddha, like you get that vibe from them. They have nothing to prove, but because they've been through this, which I think a lot of people do, but like, especially I see it with them. It's not about coming into success later in life, though that can happen.
Yeah.
And I've seen, like, I look at like, you know, even Karen Curry Parker, she's been doing this for a long time. Like she really hit her stride in her 50s. But it's the, it's almost like the quality of energy that you put out is very different and people feel it and sense it from you in a different way after 50.
Oh, yeah. It's so, so true. And I love that reminder because I remember doing an in-person workshop in California a few years ago, and there was a woman there who was in the third phase. And it was just so funny how like every time she talked, everyone just like kind of like sat back and they just like, there was just like such weight to what she was sharing. And in my past courses, there has always been like somebody in their third phase. And it's just like, it is, it's so true. It's like, even in these online spaces, everyone just like, what do they have to say? You know, it's just like, there's such, I feel like it is, there's just weight to how they share. People like really, really listen. And so I think, again, this is such a reminder that like, it's not about waiting for anything. Honestly, my experience of it is like, oh my God, there's so much to be excited for. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like we're just getting started here.
Totally. As you've progressed through, because like my question initially was like, what do you see the future with human design looking like? But I actually would, I'm curious from you working with this for almost about 10 years, like how have you seen human design progress and what have you seen change over your almost 10 years of doing this work?
Interesting. I feel like I have more thoughts on like what's changed for me than what's changed in the landscape. But I think that, I mean, it was so, I think that when I first discovered human design, there was a lot of rigidity around how it was shared. It was very much like, this is the way to do it. Mm-hmm. And like, and I remember my partner and I at the time, my business partner and I were kind of like trying to do it in a different way. And so like, it just felt like, ooh, is this allowed? You know? And I guess with time, I feel like the like, kind of like all the chains have loosened a little bit. And I feel like people have felt a lot more permission. I'm one, you are one, there are many that have felt permission to kind of share human design in different ways, in ways that reach different audiences, in ways that are less dogmatic, in ways that are less disempowering. And so like, I definitely feel like the communication of human design has really becomes so much more nuanced and so much more empowering and so much more accessible to the mainstream. With that, I also feel like there's a lack of depth sometimes, you know, and like, I'm not even here to say that's bad, because like, if it's helping people, it's helping people. But I know when I like look at things, sometimes I'm like, oh, that's just not true. Like, definitely not rooted in any of like the human design source text, which is fine. But like, I think that's also like, as things become more flexible, so to do the misunderstandings and the interpretations of it. And like, I actually don't have a problem with that, because I think, again, my focus is it useful, not whether it's true, you know? And I think if it's useful, then it's useful. And also, everyone's gonna have a different person that really resonates with them, or people. And then I would say, on my personal journey, I feel like the deeper I've gone, the less dogmatic I've become. You know, where I feel like at the beginning, I was like, this is truth. You know what I mean? Like, how can I convince people? And I'm just like, doesn't quite matter if it's true. It's like, is it useful? And like, I'm just oriented towards that. And yeah. And I think that, one, it's allowed me to reach a much broader audience. And I think that there's a real potential in human design in a very unique way that I believe it can reach the mainstream in a way that few mystical systems have before. Mm-hmm. And I think it just requires a lot of intentionality around how it's communicated. And I've had a lot of practice with that, and I'm continuing to practice, you know, but I think that that's been a big focus of mine, of like, how can I share this with people in a way that isn't alienating and that isn't scary and doesn't make them feel like I'm trying to convince them of anything, but more is just introducing them to a really cool new framework to see if it's helpful to them. So yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I feel like there are moments where I kind of dip into like the human design space in general, and moments where I'm like more just doing my own thing. But I do think, and then I guess the other piece I would say is that like, it felt like there were so few people doing it when I began, and now there are so many. And so it also feels like it's less now about having like a few big voices and more about having like such a diversity of voices, you know? And like, and I think that like, that's been really fun for us as a business, because now we've trained, you know, almost 500 people to study and share human design. And it's just like, I'm so excited to really like continue to amplify their voices, because I'm like, I've got one way of sharing it. And obviously it resonates with people, but it's like, it's one way. And so like, I'm just so excited for us to kind of lift up so many other ways, because I think that that's so much more useful. We're all gonna, you know, it all, like you said, it's like, you can hear the same information from 10 different people, and like, you learn something new every single time because of the way they see it. So I'm excited to kind of create more space for that.
I think you've also established yourself as a person of influence inside of this community that people know that they can trust, because you're when you were talking, I was thinking about the difference of like going from this, like, it has to be this way, into this sort of like relaxed back place where it's like, instead of the energy pushing outward, the energy is relaxed inward that then draws people to your work in a different way. And you've been doing this for, I mean, like eight years is a long time. And especially in this industry where a lot of people, again, I think kind of jumped on board 2018, like you said, like myself in 2020. Yeah. And I think that creates a lot of credibility and trust as well. So I think there's a real importance in being able to have teachers we can go to that not just, they don't just know the knowledge and went, this is cool, I'm going to, you know, like, I just think this is cool. But the ones who have like, I've been experimenting, I've been working with a lot of people. And again, everybody needs a new entry point. Sometimes your entry point is the person who's brand new to human design, who's speaking to your heart with their own message.
Yes. But
I do think it's also important to have these teachers who have been working with it for a long time, who can bring that wisdom and knowledge as well.
Yeah, agreed.
Do you want to tell people how they can find you? I know you've got your blueprints. I have one. I still go back to it today.
Did I send you a new version?
I don't think so.
Oh my God. I need to get you the new version.
Okay. Thank you. I love it. I'm like, I have it on my iPad. I pull it out all the time. So share with people how they can find you, work with you, etc.
So if you want to go deeper and are curious about my interpretation, the blueprint is a really beautiful place to start. It is now a 55 plus page guide all about your unique design. And it goes through all the most important pieces like centers and channels and definition and type and strategy and authority, and really just how to use it and actually integrate it into your life in a really actionable, empowering way. It's not a jargon full document. It is very accessible. People get it for their families, for their teams, for their partners. That's at humandesignblueprint.com/guide. And we have a discount code, which is Do you have a discount code you want to use? A word?
Jess10.
Jess10. Jess10 is the code. And then if you want to learn human design with me, we have a lot of amazing classes on our website that dive into everything from types to variables and everything in between. And they're really comprehensive and deep and also practical, exploring how it can be applied to every part of our lives, from parenting to career. And then I share a lot on Instagram at Erin Claire Jones and Human Design Blueprint. And then finally, if you're like a human design reader and you're like, I want to be around other amazing readers, then we have a membership where we meet 3 times every month, diving into new, obscure, deep topics, and really practice reading and sharing together.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being here. Oh, everybody, if you don't follow, we'll post everything and link everything below. But Erin's posts on human design are still some of my most favorite, and I love receiving them from friends and, you know, clients who come through and we work with human design and whatever. It's her content is some of the best, I personally think. So definitely go give her a follow, grab your blueprint. Like I said, I still have mine and use mine often. And, then we'll see you back here on the next episode of the show. Make it a great day, everybody.
Hey, hey, thanks so much for being here and listening to this episode of the Waking Up with Jess podcast. If you liked today's episode, I'm going to ask you to do one of three things. Number one, leave a rating. Number two, leave a review. And number three, if you think it could help a friend out in need, go ahead and send it to them. I greatly appreciate your support. When you rate the podcast or leave a review, it helps other awesome and amazing listeners such as yourself find the podcast. And I love people, and I love friends, and I love people's friends. So being able to spread the love through your network is another really great way to support people and to support the show. All right, y'all, make it a great day, and I will see you back here on the next episode of the Waking Up with Jess podcast.